The Virtual CMO podcast is sponsored by the Strategic Marketing Consulting Services of the Five Echelon Group. If you'd like to work directly with the Five Echelon Group and receive personal coaching and support to optimize your business, enhance your marketing effectiveness, and grow your revenue, visit fiveechelon.com to learn more and schedule a free consultation.
Welcome to the Virtual CMO podcast. I'm your host, Eric Dickman. In this podcast, we have conversations with marketing professionals who share the strategies, tactics, and mindset you can use to improve the effectiveness of your marketing activities and grow your business. In part 9 of our masterclass series on building a strategic marketing plan for your business, I'm excited to welcome Jonathan Baldock to the program. Jonathan is an advisor to Social HP and a social media marketing expert with 10 years of experience at LinkedIn serving customers like Accenture, JPMorgan Chase, Johnson & Johnson, PepsiCo, Hershey, IBM, and others. He is highly skilled in social sharing best practices. Utilizing earned media as a results-focused evergreen channel, Jonathan is an expert in social media recruitment, sales, and marketing strategies. Social media is such an important part of your overall marketing strategy and a great way to spread the message about your brand and your products at a very low cost. So the insights that Jonathan shares today are extremely valuable to any company looking to increase their reach on social media platforms. Hey, Jonathan, welcome to the Virtual CMO podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. Hey, thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Just as a quick recap for the audience, we've been going through this 15-part masterclass series all around building out a strategic marketing plan for your business. And we've covered a number of topics already. We're right in the middle now. We've covered your target market and ideal customer profile, what it means to have product market fit and competitive differentiation with your products, then taking that and really building a brand story that resonates with your ideal customer, figuring out how you can create some compelling 3 to 5 word market messages that then you can use to publicize your product, using people like freelancers, digital creators to expand the capacity of your marketing team. We've got a lot of businesses that are in the SMB space and might not have huge teams. So how can you leverage those content creators? And then we got into a little bit of the subject of marketing automation, customer relationship management, and some of the underlying tools that you want to have as part of your marketing stack. And now we get to talk about some of the fun stuff is after you've built that messaging, how do you get that messaging out into the world? And so you're a perfect guest to have on the show to discuss this. So if you would, let's just kick things off. Can you give the audience a little bit of background and tell them a little bit about what you're doing today?
Yeah, sure. So up until the middle of the summer of last year, I was with LinkedIn. I was there for almost 10 years. And I was building social media recruitment strategies for LinkedIn's largest global customers for the first 5 years. And then the second half was all around employee advocacy, which was really about enabling your workforce to be able to distribute the content on your behalf. And so that was creating really solid evergreen channels that were much less expensive than paid campaigns. And there was a variety of use cases. I was working with a whole bunch of LinkedIn customers, and there were a lot of learnings that we had through that. And then when I finished up with LinkedIn, I started doing an advisory role for Social HP. And it's basically the next generation of employee advocacy, where it solves a couple of the big problems that all of my previous customers at LinkedIn had. And so I'm happy to be able to bring all of that kind of conversation to the next level.
I can't wait to get into that, but I think it might be fun to start the conversation and just rewind the clock a little bit and talk about where social media has been and sort of what it has turned into today. You've been close to this for a long time. How have you seen these platforms really evolve?
Well, so, I mean, I can certainly give you my perspective, and the best one that I have is on the LinkedIn platform. When I started, it was at the beginning of 2011. There were 600 employees. When I left, there was over 13,000 employees.
Wow.
And I think we had 80 million members when I started, and there was 750 million members when I left. So a lot of growth. The platform for the first few years was really about people just trying to find a job.
Yeah.
So a lot of job postings on there. That's typically, if you ask people what's LinkedIn for, they would say, oh, it's, you know, once I'm out of a job or I'm looking for my next one, I update my profile. It's kind of like my virtual resume.
Yep.
And I get at it. And to be honest, for a long time, that's kind of what it was initially focused on. The marketing or the B2B aspect, which is, you know, the paid campaigns, that was really, really building up as I started with the organization as well. And but it's evolved. It's gone from a platform of just trying to find a job. It evolved to a platform of people sharing ideas. And so, you know, hey, if I'm working on a project and other people have worked on one before, you know, maybe they could help me out. I could ask questions. People could lend a hand. And that became a real sort of regular part of the conversation. And now it's evolved into a communications platform and a publishing platform. So you can get your news there. You can distribute content about your organization, but you can also really learn a lot. So you can get a lot of thought leadership, a lot of industry news, and people are consuming the content there. So, you know, storytelling has been a big part of LinkedIn's past, but it's certainly, I think, the foreseeable future is that's where it's headed.
How much have you seen LinkedIn change since the sale to Microsoft?
It was always left alone right after the sale, but they were looking at ways to integrate the platforms. So I think you're going to see more changes in the future. But the first change that I noticed was LinkedIn had a division called Sales Solutions. And so they were selling a tool called Sales Navigator. They still are. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Microsoft's team, which is the Microsoft Dynamics team. So that's the competitive platform to Salesforce. And so rather than operating completely siloed and separate, their Dynamics team started to represent the Sales Solutions team into their customers. So instead of just selling Dynamics, they could sell Dynamics and LinkedIn Sales Solutions tools. So they were starting to do that, like introduce the account teams. So if you went on a sales call, perhaps you went out with the Microsoft team. Those were starting to be regular kinds of conversations. When you look at the platform itself, I think there's a lot of opportunity for Microsoft to be able to really to do something with it. So, for example, like when you're in Outlook, and if you and I have a meeting coming up, instead of me having to go over to LinkedIn and then type in your profile and look it up, it would actually just pop up on the side of your Outlook and say, "Hey, you've got a meeting coming up with Eric, and here's his LinkedIn profile." So I don't actually have to go anywhere. So, you know, integrating the tool so that way it becomes a little more seamless. So I see for the future, you know, the LinkedIn experience being more integrated into the Office 365 experience.
Yeah.
And then when you look at, you know, what's the future? Well, there's organizations, you know, like, I mean, obviously they're competing with Salesforce with Dynamics, but there's another space, which is, you know, what are they going to do against companies like Oracle and SAP and others?
Sure.
And they do have the ability with the intelligence and the knowledge around employees, you can integrate that into the Microsoft backend. So, you know, most organizations have the Microsoft services resting, and then they have their tools in front of it. And so Microsoft could potentially replace all of those systems, because most HRIS systems, which is the ones that keep track of all the employees, what jobs they have, et cetera, to be honest, as soon as you start at the company, 6 months after that, the data they have about you is old. Mm-hmm. You might have learned new tools, new skills, or if you change jobs, you get promoted. That doesn't get updated in the system automatically. But almost everybody updates their LinkedIn profile to say that this is what I'm doing and this is the team I'm on. So if that information automatically feeds into the HR system, then in a way, you've got like this self-updating HR system, which there isn't one now. So yeah. You know, that's like a lot of where they can go. And I think there's a big opportunity for them to make money doing that.
Yeah, certainly. As you talked about the integration with the Office 365, you know, they've had a big push with Teams. You could see some integration with chat. There just seemed to be a lot of things that they could do. At the same time, LinkedIn seems to be a very deliberate platform. They've been a little slow rolling out video. They've introduced that stories functionality that so many of the other platforms have, but it's still pretty limited and not that widely used yet. So as a publishing platform, it still seems to have a lot of room to grow. But for many businesses, especially in the B2B space, right, it's an excellent place to find your potential customers, to find prospects, and get your message out to them. But I think a lot of people struggle knowing exactly what's the best way to do that. Because as you said, it used to be kind of looked at as a job board. So people would post accomplishments and whatnot to be recognized for other opportunities. How do you really see it changing in terms of a publishing platform where businesses can use it to get the message out about their products and services?
Well, you know, I think if you look at almost every single kind of platform, it was really about pushing out an ad.
Yeah.
So, you know, originally it was banner ads or you could do videos and things like that, but it was like a commercial and ad, something like that. And then you had sponsored updates, which would be more along the lines of telling a story, talking about an issue. And then that would talk about your expertise, but it wasn't really a commercial. It was more of a piece, a thought leadership piece, an article that you could basically promote to the audience that matters to you. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you have your business, you have your target audience, you could then go to LinkedIn and say, I care about these companies with people from, you know, these titles, these levels, these roles, et cetera. I want to target that audience. What's that going to cost me? And then this is this story that I want to put in front of them. And then this is the actionable item at the end. Like, mm-hmm. I want them to, you know, click and go to our site. I want them to click and view our product page, our pricing page, et cetera, et cetera. Or perhaps it's, you know, book a meeting with me. So, you know, that's how it shifted. It went from straight advertising to providing some value and having a conversation, starting a conversation. A lot of it was that. And so I think that's sort of, you know, where it started, where it's evolving to, and then where it's heading is a lot more around just that storytelling aspect, which is even continuing down the road of thought leadership, industry news, and a little bit about your company. Having the right ratio of content to share out, making sure that you're following those best practices so that way you don't just sound like a blowhorn for your products and services.
Right.
And, you know, and if you're investing in paid advertising, that you have to do it very smartly. And so thinking about this, the marketing funnel or the sales funnel, if you will, building that awareness. Once we get people through that awareness stage, how do we move them to stage two, where they start to get familiar with our products and services? Then after that, how do they raise their hand to say, actually, this is probably a product or service that I should be learning a little bit more about? We're about 6 months or 9 months away from buying it, and getting them into the sales funnel, getting them connected into your accounts team, and then working them through to eventually making a deal. And so, you know, how do we form that funnel? Are we constantly putting people into the top of it? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the strategy now. It's just translating that into these kinds of environments.
So, you know, we're going to get into details here about how we do all this. But of course, yep. One of the challenges on any platform is the reach of any one individual, right? You go out there, you post some really good content. And of course, there are algorithms at play. Do you post it natively? Do you post a link to something else? Is it video? Is it text? What is it? There are all sorts of different decisions that you have to make that can influence that. But then for most people, you've really got your followers, the people who you're connected with. And then if you're lucky and you put some hashtags in and those get some sort of traction, which seems to be fairly rarely, you right. may get picked up more broadly outside of your network. And so as I talk to a lot of businesses, this is what they fight against. They feel like, well, we're putting all this content out there, but we don't get any reaction to it, or we get very little reaction. Is it even working?
Right. So I guess we need to look at it in two pieces. You know, you need to have a company page on LinkedIn if you have a business, even if you're a one person shop. You need to have a company page because it elevates your profile a little bit more. Your company's represented, products and services, etc. And that's all free to do. So you can create that and you can build it. Your reach as an individual, if we just focus on an individual sharing out content, if you have the average person on LinkedIn has 800 connections. So if you have somewhere around that mark, if you share something out, that's going to go into the newsfeed of 800 people. Also, if you do any publicly facing actions, meaning if you like, comment, or reshare any existing story, that will also go to your network. Mm-hmm. So not just producing and delivering and sharing content that's originally sourced by you, but it's also good to participate in conversations yeah. because you're going to stay top of mind with your network. Now, if you take a look at who's your network, usually it's going to be your existing customers and ideally a bunch of your prospects. Mm-hmm. And so regularly staying involved in the conversation, even if you're not getting a lot of engagements, is still keeping familiarity and some visibility towards you because you're showing up in the newsfeed. Not everyone's going to click on your story every single time, but they may say, oh, look, you know, oh, Eric's shared this. Oh, that's interesting. Or, oh, Eric commented on this. Yeah. That's a good point. And they're not necessarily digging in or they're not necessarily responding to you, but they are seeing that you're consistently in front of them. And if you're doing it thoughtfully, meaning you're not just sharing content for the sake of sharing content, but you're sharing content or stories or thought leadership that's adding value to your network, then you're raising your profile. So you're no longer considered just somebody who just happens to be clicking on stuff like, you know, a sort of a typical Facebook post, like, hey, here's me at Starbucks. And then here's me, right. You know, right. Doing my laundry and all the other things that people seem to like to promote right. about themselves on various social platforms. LinkedIn's really not about that. So in order to be, in the conversation, we need to think about what is the story that I'm participating in? Here's my area of expertise. Here's where I can add value. I'm a subject matter expert on these kinds of things. Then when you see stories about that, share that story, add your perspective. That's adding value into the network. And that's where your network's going to go, oh, like Eric's really a leader in this. Oh, Eric's like, you know, top drawer in this area. Now when I need a product or service and it's related to anything you're a subject matter on, you're top of mind and you're already considered, you know, like a front runner, if you will.
No, I think that's excellent advice because that's really what you're trying to do, right? You're trying to stay top of mind. You're trying to build some authority in a specific subject area, a domain. But just to clarify something that you said earlier, if I have 700 connections and I do a post, not all 700 get to see it, right? There is an algorithm that says some fractional percentage of these 700 are actually going to see that post show up in their timeline.
It'll go to all of their timelines.
Does it really?
Yeah. Will they actually see it is another question.
Yeah.
Meaning it depends on how busy their timeline is. So if they have 2,000 connections or 20,000 connections, a lot of people could be sharing stuff, which means you could share something and 5 minutes later, it's 100 items down on their timeline. So they could easily miss it, but it's definitely going to go to everybody's timeline.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's just, are they scrolling all the way through? So if they have a less active timeline, you're going to be showing up often. Whereas if they have a more active timeline, you're going to show up every now and again because it's around the timing that they're on. The good news is that LinkedIn, well, I mean, you know, since COVID, it's just skyrocketed the amount of usage. People are on it all the time. You know, they're doing some work and then they're jumping on LinkedIn and catching the latest news and information because it's providing so much information these days. People are using it as a real source of news in relation to business.
So you talked about the importance of having a company page.
Yeah,
company creates some good content. You as an individual within that company in a specific role, you're obviously trying to build up your reputation, your knowledge in a particular domain of expertise. And so you've got both of these potential places where content can reside. But then how do you start to accelerate that? How do you start to build momentum around the content that you create? So for example, we're doing this podcast today. I'm going to create some social media posts when it goes live. My hope is that you'll share those to your network and sure. Some other people will share them as well. That starts to get the ball rolling, right? You get a little bit of a snowball effect once that content gets shared. But as a company, how can you be more effective at doing that?
So I guess one is being thoughtful about what is it you want to communicate. And so a lot of times people, they're very reactive. And so they don't necessarily have a thought out marketing plan as to how it relates to telling stories. And so something comes up and then they react to it and then they post. Whereas, and let me just take a step back. First, let's talk about the ideal sharing cadence of content, which is sort of the ratio. So there's what LinkedIn would consider to be a best in class or best practice kind of ratio,
okay,
which is for every 6 pieces of content you share, 3 should be thought leadership, 2 should be company content, industry content, and 1 should be company content. So it's the 3-2-1. So for every 6 pieces, you're only talking about yourself once. You're providing value to the industry twice, and you're providing value to your network from a thought leadership perspective 3 times. And so and that doesn't necessarily mean you have to write 3 original posts on, you know, what you're a subject matter expert on, but what it means is that you're participating in a conversation. But every six posts that you do about yourself, you want to tell a story over a period of time. So, you know, just like that marketing funnel, how do I build awareness for a little while? Then after I build awareness, then how do I step it down into, now we're getting into, you know, what specifically are we doing in the market that's different, unique? How are we providing value? And then specifically, you know, what are some of the services that we have that really lifts up that market that we're servicing? And then finally, you know, here's an offer or here's, you know, a webinar that people can participate in. And of course, we're going to follow up and see if we can book calls and meetings from it. So so that I think is, you know, being thoughtful about the, you know, the distance or, you know, how you go through there. Then there's ways to try and drive more engagements. There's a few tricks. One is video. Video is very engaging. And so that you get a lot more clicks on pretty much every single social channel. And most social channels just autoplay. So as soon as it shows up in the feed, it just starts playing that video.
Yep.
So so that's a good thing. And there are some other little tricks that I've noticed that seem to be working really well, which is like lists, top five list, top three list, top six ways. And as long as there's substance in it, it's like, oh, I could read six things. I have time for three things, you know, like, but if it's, you know, if it's like the, you know, a diatribe about something really important, I'm not going to take that on. I don't have enough time, but if I have 3 minutes and I see an article that's really interesting, that's great. You know, cause then it's like, you know, here are the top five ways. Don't miss number three, you know, number three is the clincher, you know, and then people click on it and they're like, yeah, it actually it is. And, you know, and you can even put in a little action item, like, you know, do you agree? Are there any things that we missed or, you know, what are your top five, whatever it is, you know, and then people, then a conversation starts. You could do surveys on LinkedIn. So, those are all free.
Yep.
So you can launch one of those. And then, I would say, depending on if it's rolled out to you, there's LinkedIn Live is available for some, not all yet, but that is rolling out across the network. Same thing with video, just standard video. That's rolling out. I think you can do the updates across the top, like all the other social.
Yeah,
the stories. I think everybody's got that now.
Yes.
So so I would say that's a, you know, a few things to drive some visibility.
So it was interesting, sort of the 3-2-1 example that you used before, because seeing that you do two pieces of company content versus, you know, one personal post or something that was talking about you, in some ways, that seems to be the opposite of what I would expect. And the reason why is I don't see that many companies creating the volume of content that would really easily facilitate. I'm a big fan of HubSpot as a company. HubSpot produces amazing content, tons of blog posts. There's always something to share at a company like that. But many others are in this kind of press release, you know, mentality or upcoming webinar or new product release, but it's not a lot of really great original content. So it's interesting to me that the LinkedIn model sort of favors still sharing more of that company content before you're sharing your own content.
Well, and so what I mean by content about you is the company content.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking about you and the company as like one, like, so you're representing your business. If you're a one person shop, and, or if, even if you have employees, you don't want them sharing stuff about the company too often. Mm-hmm. So I'll just quickly review. So three pieces of thought leadership, my mistake on when I first said it, but three pieces of thought leadership, two pieces of industry news, one about the company. The last one, the company is about you.
Okay.
So, okay. Which means that's actually much easier to do because it's easier to find thought leadership, you know, Harvard Business Review. There's like all kinds of channels of that. And then, there's, industry news is easy to follow. There's all kinds of blogs and streams that you can pull in, you know, information. And then even just participating in conversations is still, you know, still sort of lends to that. And then it's, and then, you know, of those, then, you know, one thing about you or your company, you know, about how you guys are driving value or service or, you know, an upcoming webinar or product or, you know, something that you're trying to get some action on to create some business. So it's about providing value before you ask for the business is really sort of the theme there. Mm-hmm. And then, heading into a conversation around, if you have a business and you have employees, you will see, and it's pretty consistent, and it's exceptionally rare that you would see like a lot of followers, and I mean like a high number of followers for a company page, and where the employees' reach isn't dramatically more. So, for example, if there's a company of 50 people, their company page might have 1,000 or 2,000 followers, but 50 people with the average of 800 connections, well, that's a reach of 40,000 people.
Yeah, so exponentially more.
Yeah, so I could do a company page update and I reach 2,000. I can get my employees to share it and I reach 40,000. And who are my employees connected to? Well, they're connected to our customers and they're connected to our prospects. Mm-hmm. So we definitely want our employees sharing that content. And that's the value of being able to amplify messaging through that employee's network. And that's the value also of making it the least expensive channel to do so. Because a paid campaign to target those customers and those prospects is going to cost you a lot of money and the most money on LinkedIn. You know, average cost per engagement, LinkedIn is by far and away more expensive than all the other ones. It's also by far and away the most effective, but you're going to pay for it. Whereas if you can consistently share content through your employees, for the most part, you're reaching the same audience. The difference is that it's not costing you anything other than your employees that are already there, but you're already paying them and they're doing their jobs.
Hey, it's Eric here, and we'll be right back to the podcast. But first, are you ready to grow, scale, and take your marketing to the next level? If so, the Five Echelon Group's virtual CMO consulting service may be a great fit for you. We can help build a strategic marketing plan for your business and manage its execution step by step. We'll focus on areas like how to attract more leads, how to create compelling messaging that resonates with your ideal customers, how to strategically package and position your products and services, how to increase lead conversion, improve your margins, and scale your business. To find out more about our consulting offerings and schedule a consultation, go to 5echelon.com and click on services. Now back to the podcast. When we first talked about the topic for this live stream, you know, one of the things that struck me is how rarely I've heard anybody talk in these terms about the way that you could get exponentially more visibility by engaging proactively with your employees to push out this content than you could on your own. It seems so obvious when you say it, but I don't really think many people are doing it.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess first off, it's not necessarily a brand new idea. The idea has been around for 8 or 10 years, but the execution of it is not necessarily that easy. Mm-hmm. Yes, you'll get a reach of maybe 30 to 50 times more people than you would if you did a company page update. The downside is that you've got to convince all your employees to do it. And so there have been advocacy platforms or advocacy tools. They've been around for years. Mm-hmm. And LinkedIn, the one I worked with, which was called LinkedIn Elevate, they actually just sunset it. And I can explain why, but it makes sense that they do because they're going to make more money from getting rid of it, to be honest, than if they kept it. But the idea here is that you want your employees to share it, but with any tool like this, if you don't buy a service, you've got to email everybody and beg, borrow, and plead and sure. Try and convince your employees to do it. And to be honest, most of the time, they're just not. Right. Unless you've got the most engaged employees and they just love everything you say, but I think that's probably not the case. They're busy and they're trying to do their jobs and this is a distraction.
You're rated the best company to work for, number one on Glassdoor, something like it's something that they want to share because yeah, it makes them feel good.
It.
Yeah, they're proud of it.
100%.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that one's not too tough to get them to share.
Yep.
But the rest of the stuff, like about products and services, it's going to be a tougher sell.
Yep.
So then you can buy a tool or a service like an advocacy tool, and they've been around a long time. But I can tell you the overall average monthly usage is about 20%. So if you have 1,000 employees, 200 of them are going to log in and use it, and 800 are going to forget about it.
Because it requires them to do something.
It does. It requires them to log in. It requires them to look and find the story they want to share. Then they need to select it. Then they need to click share. Then they need, you know, maybe they add in their comments about why they think it's important for somebody to read it within their network. The people that are doing that are the people, those are the early adopters. Those are the people that when a new iPhone comes out, you know, they race down and they order it right away and it shows up at their house and they're super excited about it. Right. Most people are not early adopters. And so you can talk to them about this idea and you can, you know, say, hey, do you think this is a good idea? And they'll say yes. And you can get them to sign up for the platform. Good luck on having them follow through on it. It's kind of like if you send people out on a training course. I've been to so many different training courses through my career and they give you a binder. And at the end of the course, they say, what did you guys think? And everyone's like, oh my God, this was so amazing. Like, thank you so much for giving us the course. And then they say, okay, every week you're going to open up the binder and you're going to write in your goals, your notes, your this, your that. And you go, yes, 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 I will. And then you get back to the office and you close the binder and you slide it on your shelf and you never look at it again.
It's so true.
And that's what happens. And so this is the exact same thing. Most organizations, once you've got a single sign-on kind of tool, like Okta, you sign into that, you've got access to 50 apps, 80 apps, 100 apps. Mm-hmm. You're not going to use all those apps, yet they've assigned them to you as if you should be.
Right.
But what you're going to do is you're going to do the least amount of technology to get your job done. Because otherwise, your full-time job will feel like I'm just clicking on apps, updating things. And yes, they want me to do it, but it's just not like I'm not getting my job done any faster. In fact, now I'm just an administrator clicking on stuff. Mm-hmm. So this will very quickly feel like a burden. And the employees that use it understand the value of it and are willing to go that extra mile, spend, you know, a few minutes a day going in and finding a story and giving their perspective. They are also the people that really love the likes, you know, comments, reshares, and they if they're on Facebook, they're the ones that are posting themselves holding the Starbucks coffee with their name misspelled going, they did it again.
Right. You exactly.
know, they misspelled my name, you know, and then they get, you know, a lot of, oh, you're so funny, right. You know, and that's cool. And they're going to adopt this, but and I'm not saying that everyone that's like this does that, but just that, it's the people that are more engaged are going to be using a tool like this. The rest of them, the other 80%, they can raise their hand and say, this sounds great. And once it comes to the practical experience of actually doing it, the follow through is low. And so you need some functionality if you invest in something like this that can handle it. So that, you know, you go from being, you know, 20% usage to something much, much higher where it's still the same cost. But the value of these platforms is very, very high. So now I go back to your first point, which is you don't see too many companies doing this.
Right.
There's a variety of reasons. One is they don't know about it. Two is it sounds difficult. Three, they couldn't sell it internally. Four, they've done it before and it didn't work because they couldn't get anybody to do it and they got frustrated. And then five, they just can't be bothered. Mm-hmm. They're like, you know, like it depends on the motivating factor of who would be the decision maker. You know, sometimes people are motivated because they want to get promoted and there's positive visibility. And if they see pulling in a tool like this and having it not working out, being risky on their career, they're not going to do it. Mm. There's very few people that their main motivation is the greater good. And so, you know, that handful of people that are organized and willing to put in the time and work and effort to make one of these programs successful, you know, those are the people that are going to get the job done. So if you want to stand out, you know, in a perfect world, you find a tool that gets you a very high usage with very low input and a very low cost. If you've got that, you've got the perfect recipe. And then the result is, you know, it might be the same price as 1 2-week campaign, but you've now got a channel that's available to you the entire year. And when you've got an entire year to tell your story, you can really be thoughtful. All right, the first couple of months, we're just going to be talking about our culture and the great work we're doing in the community and how we interact with the community and everything else. Then we're going to start talking about our employee value proposition and how we're donating to this and to that and maybe some profiles on our employees and how exceptional they are. And then you start pulling in the executives and your subject matter experts sharing their thought leadership. And then you work your way through to eventually everyone's got some familiarity. Everyone's got a lot of engagement. And then you go, by the way, we just launched this amazing new product and we've got this webinar coming up about it. We would love for everybody to attend. And that's why companies like HubSpot that are very engaging, they are very smart with, you know, how they're telling their story. Most of their blog posts aren't by HubSpot, right? It's you know, blog posts just about helping you, you know.
That's very true. It's adding value.
Yeah. What's the story about your business? And then you go, oh my gosh, this is like going to be super helpful for me. And you click on it and there's a few little tidbits in there about, you know, why you're going to make more money. And you just remember HubSpot shared that to me. Mm. HubSpot added value to my day. Now, when I need a product or service, that's something, you know, and then I realize, oh, HubSpot actually sells something like that. They're top of my list for sure.
So if I was going to oversimplify things, is a tool like a Social HP, is it almost like a multi-user buffer in some ways? So you're having multiple people opt into a tool, a scheduling tool that is automatically going to reshare posts on their behalf. Is that an overly simplistic way of looking at it?
I mean, that's a part of it.
Okay.
So I would divide it into two things. An advocacy platform where you get 20% usage. So that's, you know, Social HP has all the functions of all the other advocacy platforms, which is if you want to go in and you want to, you know, find a great story to share out to your network, it's there. You know, thought leadership, industry news, company content, it's all there. It's all curated. It's all set up for you. And if it's approved and it's available, it's in that tool. So I don't have to look all over the company at websites and, you know, different blogs, trying to source the stuff I'm allowed to share. It's all in one spot. Brilliant. So if I'm part of that 20% that's willing to go in and do it, it's awesome. It's all set up. For the other 80%, that's that second portion, okay, which is if I'm the administrator, a half an hour a month, I can send out a couple of posts a week on behalf of the rest of the 80% of the employees. So now they're actually sharing and we're reaching that huge amount of customers and prospects that we would never have been able to engage before just with a few clicks. And that employee group gets two choices. They can just basically say, you guys are the social media marketing experts and I'm not. I'm, you know, employee such and so doing this job over here. I don't actually want to become a social media marketing expert. It's a separate job. So I don't want to be an expert on media. But if you are, brilliant. You pick the right stuff, make me look like a genius to my network, all good. And so for those folks, they can just, it's basically, we have a do it for me functionality. And so that, you know, that marketing, social media marketing person, they do it on the back end. And then it just happens, you know, for my calendar and it gets shared out to my network. So that's one. The second piece is, hey, I want a little more control. And so I sign up with a locked calendar. And so you can still do the perfect cadence of sharing once a week, twice a week. You share out these great things for me. But instead of it automatically going out to my network, the day before it's scheduled to go out, I get a quick email saying, hey, Jonathan, can you review and approve this? And so I just hit approve and it goes out, or I can hit edit and I can personalize it and then I can send it. Now dinner is literally being served up and put in front of me and I just have to decide if I want to eat it.
I'm curious because that sounds so flexible. What is the breakdown? I mean, do you find that a lot of people are willing to sort of turn over control and say, I trust you, I'm going to be able to just let you go and do that? Or do you see most people on the more conservative side say, I have to like take a look at it first?
So I guess there's a few factors. One is, how is the message delivered? So if the message is delivered to employees, this is what we're doing, you have no choice, you better sign up this way, there's going to be some resistance.
Sure.
But if the message is, hey, this is what we're trying to accomplish, we think these are the benefits for you as the individual employee, we're going to raise your professional profile, we're going to be sharing thoughtful stuff that your community is going to be engaging with, and it's going to add value to the network. And oh, by the way, every now and again, we're going to put in a company post. Great. It's not going to be very often. It's going to be like every six posts that we do on your behalf. And when we do, it's going to be something that's related to your business, your job, or you're in that division, for example, like you sell these services. It's not advertising stuff that you have nothing to do with. So that way, if one of your clients or your prospects actually sees it and they click back and they're like, oh, hey, Eric, thanks for sharing that. And you're like, oh, I don't have anything to do with that. Yeah. So now to be like, yes, please, you know, respond and, you know, let's book that call. So if it's helping me get sales meetings, it's helping me close business and it's helping me look good, you can get some hands raised. Mm. So if it's done well, you get a good uptick. Then I think it's about culturally, like where in the world are you? So in North America, I'd say it's not like a really big hurdle to get past.
Right.
Definitely you're going to see some, you know, some conservative employees. And I think for those employees, if they're uncomfortable with it, they just shouldn't sign up. Just don't do it. But, you know, at any company, like if you have 1,000 employees, you shouldn't expect all 1,000 to sign up for one of these. Yeah. Typically, you usually, like after you roll it out and you do well with it, you get about half of your employees to sign on. And then of those half, if you deliver the message really well, then yes, they have no problem with signing up and saying, hey, you know, take care of it. And then there's a small portion that say, you know what, I still want the approval. Or maybe, you know, and executives, because we can do like the sort of VIP, white glove treatment for executives where somebody can literally, you know, share and build out the perfect calendar just for particular executives, for example. But if you're in a place like EMEA, so through, you know, different parts of Europe, culturally, it's very different.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about like, you do not get access to anything of mine. My network is my network. I work at the company and I do my job. And then when my job is done, I go home, or I stay home now, but I do my job and I technically work here, but good luck on getting me to do anything else. And it's a little more that way. I wouldn't say, you know, everyone's like that, but it's a little more that way. So you're going to get a smaller percentage of people that are going to buy in, depending on where you are regionally. But, you know, in North America, my experience has been that a lot of people are very open and willing to do it. And in fact, lots of places throughout the world. But I have noticed in certain locations within Europe, it's a little bit tighter, and which is totally fine. Like, hey, let's be respectful. There's no reason to push this kind of stuff on anybody, but there's definitely a lot of value in people participating.
No, that makes perfect sense. Cultural factors would certainly be in play here. I guess as we're sort of nearing the end of our interview here, the last question that I really had for you is, for a solution like this or an advocacy platform to really be effective, I would imagine an organization needs to be of a certain size. You know, if you're a 10-person company, is something like this really going to make sense? Or is this really for enterprise-level customers? Where do you see the sweet spot, or maybe below a certain point is probably not going to be that effective for the money?
Okay. So most of our customers are 50 employees and up.
Okay. That's smaller than I thought, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, could you make it very successful with 10 employees? Yes. But the smallest sweet spot is about 50 employees and up. And then after that, it goes all the way up to, you know, 500,000 employees. Mm. So, it's the gamut, but, you know, if you're a small business and you just have like two or three employees, it's probably not necessarily the best solution. That doesn't, a product like this, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be doing these kinds of things.
Yes.
You know, getting your employees to share. But I think you could pop out a quick email and say, hey, everybody, do you mind? With 10 employees, it's not that difficult to, you know, you've got such a small team, you're so cohesive, ideally, that that you know, they're more than willing to share it out. But it's once everyone's really dispersed and they're all kind of doing their own thing, and teams are talking to teams, but not everybody's communicating as a whole, it's a little bit harder to get everybody on one of these types of topics and consistently, you know, delivering out thought leadership and you know, company content easily. So that's when one of these tools really becomes extra value.
I think that's really helpful. You know, we're fortunate in the MarTech space. We've got so many solutions out there, all of which do a lot of very cool things, but clearly, everybody's got marketing budgets. They have to decide which is the most important place to put their marketing investment. And so, yeah, it's helpful to know what the sweet spot is really for a tool like this, because it seems like you could really get a lot of leverage from your content by being able to get it shared more frequently and by people that are trusted already within their network. So I love the concept of it.
Yeah. And I would quickly say, so for example, if you have 50 employees, the cost of a platform like this for a year is $4,500. Mm-hmm. Whereas one small campaign on LinkedIn is $10,000.
Yeah, good point.
And that small campaign on LinkedIn might last you 2-3 weeks. And $4,500 is going to last you a year. And 50 people is going to reach 40,000 for the entire year. So when it's actually like, if you don't have a big budget, this is a no-brainer. And then when you have a huge budget, unless it's unlimited, which is when we talk about evergreen marketing.
Yeah.
So when I was at LinkedIn, they would say, hey, you know what? Like if you're, for example, in AI and you know, you want to win all the AI business, they would measure your share of voice, which is the total number of conversations happening about AI. Then they would measure how many conversations you're involved with, okay, meaning your company.
Yep.
And then they would say your share of voice is X percent.
Yep.
And then your competitors, then they could stack rank you against all of your competitors, like IBM's in AI, this company's in AI, and here's how much of the share of voice they have. And then, you know, if you have big budget, they would say, okay, great, you have 0.5% of share of voice. If you want to be number one, which would be 15%, you need to give us about $5 million and we're going to flip the switch and you're going to be talking to these people for the entire year.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Or, you know, just go through your employees who happen to be connected, everybody in the AI space, because that's where you are, and own that conversation. And this is how it could be a great equalizer, because a company with 50 people reaching 40,000, what size of company has 40,000 followers? They've got 4,000 employees. So a 50-person company is now competing with a company that has 4,000 employees, and they appear the same on LinkedIn. They're occupying the same amount of space in that conversation. yet one is spending $4,500 and the other one is spending no money, and yet they appear equal. That's a win in my book.
No, it's definitely a win. That's a great business case. I'm glad you shared that with the audience because, yeah, it's all about choices, right? But sometimes, especially if you're going into paid advertising, which is our topic for next week, it gets expensive quickly.
Yeah. And look, paid advertising is effective.
Yeah.
Because it's so targeted. Mm-hmm. And so you can't argue like, hey, every single one of your employees' connections are exactly who you're trying to sell to. But the answer is they are connected to everybody you're trying to sell to for the most part. So, you know, it's not about like trying to measure apples for apples, meaning like, oh, that 40,000 reach, they're all, it's like we're running a paid campaign on 40,000 people every single week when we're sharing content. No, you're not. It may be 5,000 of the 40,000, that's all your buyers. And then the other 35,000 could be people that you're trying to hire, people that you're, you know, that maybe move into the space or that are supporting your business. There's, you know, obviously your networks, your employees' networks are going to be broad. So, you know, it's not an apples to apples comparison between paid, but I will say it's certainly the least expensive avenue in trying to get your voice heard.
I love that. And I'd love to give you a few minutes here just at the end to tell people where they can find out more about the platform, where they can find out more about you, because you've shared some great insights with us today. And I think it's something that people should definitely check out.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I appreciate the opportunity. So we're found at socialhp.com. And if you visit our site, you can just hit click to ask for a demo. Otherwise, if you're looking to have a chat with me, then you can just go to LinkedIn. You can just type in my name, Jonathan Baldock. My name is the URL. So if you just go to linkedin.com/Jonathan Baldock, you'll pull me up and you can just hit me up with a message and I'm happy to help out.
Jonathan, this is great. I love talking about solutions like this, especially when they can help in the very complicated world of social media. There are so many innovations that are happening regularly, new platforms that seem to be coming into prominence quickly, but it's tough to keep up with. And I love to see the innovation in this space and some of the new solutions that are coming online. So really appreciate you coming in today and sharing all the great things you guys are doing over at SocialHP.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Virtual CMO Podcast. For more episodes, go to 5echelon.com/podcast to subscribe through your podcast player of choice. And if you'd like to develop consistent lead flow and a highly effective marketing strategy, visit 5echelon.com to learn more about our Virtual CMO consulting services.